Yes, Josh Graham has opinions.
There is nothing that entertains the audience and the masses more than me being bothered.
And yes, he's got attitude.
Really, none of the game made sense to me.
And that's exactly why you love him.
When this all gets sorted out, I think you and me should get an apartment together.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
You are on a Thursday Drive, WSJS, News Talk Sports for The Triad, where 9 weeks from tonight, week one of the college football season will kick off in Winston-Salem with Wake Forest hosting what our friend Wes Durham calls Mighty Elon. Not to bum anybody out, especially the beachgoers out there, but 9 weeks isn't that long of a time. So it's about time we start looking ahead. And when you take a look at week one, when you look at the week one slate, there aren't a lot of great games on that first Saturday. But one game that does stand out is North Carolina, South Carolina, and Charlotte. And that's where College Game Day should be to open the season. The SEC powerhouses, they're all playing cupcakes. Alabama is going up against Middle Tennessee. Georgia, the champs, will throttle UT Martin to open things up. LSU does play Florida State in week one, but that's not a Saturday game. That is a Sunday night deal, just as it was a year ago in the Dome down in New Orleans. So that's not going to be where College Game Day goes. Plus, if there was a top SEC game in week one, that game would likely be broadcast on CBS, not on ESPN. This is the last year that CBS has the top SEC game, or has an SEC game at all. Beyond this year, it's all going to belong to ESPN. That's why North Carolina and South Carolina is already going to be in prime time on ABC, Disney properties, 7:30 kickoff time on September 2nd from Bank of America Stadium. The Big Ten, it's kind of related to this too. The Big Ten's exclusively out of the Disney business. They're exclusively out on ESPN. They will be broadcasting their games. Their games will be broadcast on NBC, Fox, and CBS, not on ESPN, not on ABC. So if your answer to the question is, hey Josh, how about that Penn State West Virginia game on NBC that first weekend, have a pretty good inkling ESPN's not going to want to promote that one too much, given how negotiations just went and how ESPN was left in the dark by the Big Ten. Oh, yeah, but what about that Ohio State-Indiana game that's going to be on CBS at 3:30 or noon earlier that day? Don't think they're going to want to touch that one either. Promoting the Big Ten that just left them in the dark again, and promoting games that are on other networks. North Carolina, South Carolina, in Charlotte, that's where I think College Game Day should be. That's where I think they're going to be. And what a way to start a year for the ACC that's been given a gift here. Since the SEC deal, as I mentioned, doesn't kick in until 2024 for ESPN, and you have those Big Ten, the Big Ten's no longer in the ESPN ABC business, and you are, the ACC has a lot more access to top windows this year. Television primetime windows, prime slots, like the 3:30 ABC slot, and on ESPN and ABC in the nightcap too, that North Carolina and South Carolina will be capitalizing on to open the year. It's a great opportunity, but don't just take it from me. Here was Wake AD John Curry sitting down with us earlier this week and bringing that up.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity for the ACC this year because that's essentially, I can't remember the number exactly, Josh, it's like 18 games, 18 windows that are open, and you're talking about ABC and big ESPN. So that exposure, whether it's at noon or 3:30 or the night game, is a great opportunity for our league.
That was John Curry earlier this week. Getting back to the Carolinas matchup, though, there's plenty of hype with both schools. They both have affable, likable coaches. North Carolina has a Hall of Famer, a national championship winner in Mack Brown, Shane Beamer. Obviously, the namesake and his likability. He's done a nice job at South Carolina the last few years. They knocked off Tennessee and Clemson in November of last year. Those are huge wins for the Gamecocks. They bring Spencer Rattler back. North Carolina brings back some guy named Drake May. There's a lot of hype attached to Drake May. A lot of hype attached to this game. So for all of those reasons, not a great Saturday slate to open the year up because of the Big Ten deciding to peace out on ESPN and Disney, and the fact that you have those quarterbacks and name programs playing each other in an NFL stadium. That's all the reason why College Game Day should be there to open the season 9 weeks from this Saturday. On Twitter at WSJS Radio, if you want in on the show, that's where we're streaming video in addition to YouTube and Twitch. Will Dalton, the executive producer of this show. WD, be honest. Did you stay up to watch the Yankees, your Yankees, throw a perfect game last night?
I did, actually. Now, I didn't stay up specifically for that reason. I was up anyway.
But I was too. My phone died, so I wasn't on social media. I wish I would have been. Because if I would have saw that happening in the 7th or the 8th, I would have just flipped on my MLB and watched it. But I saw it after the fact.
Yeah, I was up laying in the bed watching it on my phone, and it was something.
You want to know just how unlikely Domingo Herman's perfect game was last night? The Yankees A broadcasting teams took the night off. So neither Michael Kay nor John Sterling were there to document that historic moment. It was instead Ryan Rucco, and here's how it sounded, how he sounded on the YES Network.
Este Uri Ruiz stands in his way. Grounded to third. Donaldson has it. There he is. Perfection for Domingo Herman.
Great call. Kind of reminds me when the Lakers announcing crew took a night off in 2006. And it just so happened to be the night that Kobe dropped 81 on the Toronto Raptors. It happens. Domingo Herman is the 24th man ever to throw a perfect game. And he's going to be a memorable addition to that exclusive Perfecto club. It's not just the all-time greats that accomplished this feat. Now, there are all-time greats who have done it. Koufax, Randy Johnson, Catfish, Halliday. You know, King Felix, the last one to do it before last night. But there are also guys like Phil Humber and Dallas Braden, who called the game for the Oakland television network last night. Domingo is going to be part of that group. Herman, he qualifies as an unlikely hero because, think about this, last night was his 84th career start in the big leagues dating back to 2017. Yet last night was just the second time that he pitched into the 7th without allowing a run, much less a hit. That's historic stuff. It just looks odd. He's out there wearing the number 0. This is a guy that, you know, barely the 5th starter in the Yankees rotation. You wouldn't it be hard-pressed to suggest that he might not have been out there if Carlos Rodon was healthy and, you know, Nestor Cortez was healthy. So a lot had to happen for him to be on the mound that night and certainly to do what he did. And it's noteworthy that it happened in Oakland in 2023 because that could be the last, you know, iconic sports moment to happen regarding the Oakland Athletics. Or how about we broaden it? How about just iconic sports moment to happen in the city of Oakland since the Raiders have already left, the Warriors already left. Like, that might be the last time we see it. And they had the longest streak. It's kind of hard to imagine this. They had the longest streak in baseball going into last night of not being no hit. That goes back, I believe, 32, 33 years of not being no hit until Domingo Herman showed up and threw a perfecto.
last night. Still very cool. Something that never gets old.
You're on the drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
No Charlotte FC match this weekend, but we'll get into Charlotte FC in a second with the voice of the boys in blue joining us now, that being Willie P. I struggle with secondary references when it comes to Charlotte FC. I really do, because it's Charlotte, and then it's, well, we're not going to do football club. Because
The crown.
Okay, let me write that one down. The crown. I've heard you say that on the broadcast a few times. I should write that down. So I have secondary references when it comes to the crown. There you go.
Gentlemen of the non-handed persuasion, I always like. That's a little convoluted.
He's on Twitter at Willie P. Style. We'll get to soccer in a bit. So tomorrow, the NBA free agency period, that's the way it's being described, begins.
Legal tampering, as it were.
Yes. Kyrie Irving going to be meeting with the Suns, according to Chris Haynes. But focusing on the Hornets, let's start here. How do things play out with Miles Bridges?
Well, that's the kind of big $64,000 question, isn't it, Josh? Because I think when you think about it from the Hornets' perspective, one thing Mitch Kupchak has been very adamant on saying, and he said this, I think, the last couple of offseasons, is that the business that they have to take care of most prominently is their own business, as opposed to going out and trying to seek out anything else. They're not going to go big game hunting, as he said, in free agency. It's the second consecutive offseason he said that, because they've got questions in their own house, and Miles Bridges is the chiefest one among them. I think that they're going to give him at least something in terms of an offer sheet. Now, whether or not a team like Cleveland or Detroit or Indiana or one of these others is going to give it a shot to try and at least maybe put their marker out there and say, hey, maybe they want to drive up the price, poison pill the contract, or even do so much as to say, hey, we actually want this guy in our organization. I think you saw a real, pretty predictable move of them giving him a qualifying offer, meaning that he is going to retain that restricted free agency. I think it's a formality that he ends up back on the Hornets, unless something 100% happens out of the blue that a team like Cleveland or another one, and Cleveland's the one that's being brought up at least currently by ESPN and other folks. I feel like that he's going to be a Charlotte Hornet. He's going to be on the floor for the Hornets after that 10-game suspension, and it's going to be a situation where they'll have to kind of navigate that minefield off the court. But outside of that, I think he's going to be a Hornet.
Oh, you mean the 30-game suspension, right? 20 games last year.
The time served, which again, we could do a whole hour on that one.
Oh yeah, that one is certainly a lot of fun. To defend Mitch Kupchak for a second though, If he wanted to go big game hunting this year, I don't think there's big game to be had. Like,
true.
Who is it? Like, it's Kyrie, it's Harden, it's Fred VanVleet, and what? Jeremy Grant? Is that what we're looking at?
That's basically it. I mean, I don't think there's anything, you know, big game hunting, I think, for them would be in the form of a trade in a way to possibly, you know, offload the expiring contract of Gordon Hayward, which, again, I think they'd have to almost sneak him in the back door and convince a team, you know, hey, here's the deal. And oh, by the way, here's Gordon Hayward on the back end. You know, like you'd almost have to pay another team to take on that contract. I know that there's potential, you know, I think when they were talking about getting Scoot Henderson in here instead of Brandon Miller, there was the thought that maybe they would trade Terry Rozier for a piece that could be more beneficial for them. But it seems like Terry's at least going to stick around as well. So I think it all comes down to whether or not they want to part and jettison away with some of these pieces. And honestly, the belief inside their building, and you can take it for what it's worth, that they feel like they were a lot better of a team because of, you know, the fact that they had so many injuries. They feel like that their record was better than the talent that they had on the floor. And that, to me, I feel like they still could maybe add a piece or two or three to get themselves back into the contention phase, but we'll see how it plays out. I think they are going to try and figure out how to make some replacements happen for Dennis Smith Jr. and Kelly Oubre Jr. as well, unless those guys come back on more team-friendly deals. I don't think KO is back. I think Smith's probably the more likely one to come back, but they are going to have to fill out the roster somehow.
Will Pelagic is with us here on WSJS and The Drive. Getting to the Carolina Panthers and the web series, the blueprint that a lot of people are reacting to.
A lot of fun.
Is that in part a Jay-Z Matt Rule jab, calling it the blueprint.
I didn't think of that initially, but I do find that somewhat deft by the folks down there. Jack Chackman is the guy who actually runs all the stuff over there in the video department. Does a fantastic job. We had a chance to meet him, I think, before an FC game 2 or 3 months ago. And, of course, Jess being the resident English woman among us, Jack is a member of the Brits as well. So they collected and reminisced as well. So that was kind of cool. But now I found that interesting. I didn't think of that initially. But it is a word that Frank Reich uses a lot, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally directed towards Matt Rule. I think it's something that really does describe this team, because they feel like they're coming in. They feel like they have some pieces, but they really want to start at the ground floor. And that's part of the reason why they went up to number one, got the quarterback, and they're trying to build that from the foundation upward.
My theory, there are stories regarding Hard Knocks and at HBO that they're struggling to find a team to take them up on doing Hard Knocks this year. The Lions, they were approached about doing it a second year and they declined. And my theory for why that is because teams are now asking, well, why are we having HBO up and do this when we can just do this ourselves? True. And we can benefit the way that the Panthers are benefiting from a series like this. What have you enjoyed the most from watching the last few episodes?
The thing I've loved the most is Deuce Staley, number one, and he was, ironically enough, the star of Hard Knocks with the Detroit Lions, and I think getting him and that personality, I think, only upped his Q rating, but he also, I think, is just a fantastic football coach. I think you look at the organizations that he's touched, whether it was as a player in Philadelphia or in Pittsburgh, and then you look at what he's done post-playing careers, particularly in Detroit and Philly and a couple of other places, he's done a very, very great job of not only manning running back rooms, but also proving to the others that he's not just a quote-unquote running back guy. I think many people thought that the addition of Deuce Staley and Thomas Brown meant that this was going to be, you know, a ground-and-pound team, and you could pull up whenever quarterback in there. Make no mistake about it. Yes, they want to run the football, those two guys, but I also think they are very, very adept at what works at the quarterback position. That's part of the reason why Frank Reich's the head coach, part of the reason why Josh McCown is the QB. It's a well-rounded coaching staff, and I keep coming away from the fact that if this isn't one of the top five staffs in the league, independent of what happens on the field, I understand that that's a big, big part of it. Yeah. But in terms of name recognition, aptitude, experience, all the things you want in a coaching staff, it's hard to believe that it's not a top five staff already before they even take the field.
Last thing for Willie P. After three consecutive draws, the crown. Yeah. They sit 2 points.
It flows nice, doesn't it?
It does. They sit 2 points back of the eighth and nine positions or the seven and eight positions, I believe, in the Eastern Conference at the two-thirds point, roughly, of the season. About 14 matches left to go. How do you feel about where Charlotte currently sits?
So here's the hard part of this, Josh, and trying to juxtapose this with last season's also very difficult, because at this point last year, Charlotte FC actually had more points than they had a year ago. But this year they have more results, meaning that they had 8 wins and 2 draws last year at this point, had about 2 more points. And in this season, they have 6 wins and 6 draws, which, again, I know that for a lot of people who are new to the game of soccer, a draw might seem unsettling. But again, it's better than taking an L. And those were a lot of L's that Charlotte FC took last year that I think kept them out of the postseason ranks. Now, there have been some games where, you know, they've come back from a losing position to earn a draw, which is very, very positive. But then there have been others, Colorado being foremost among them, and even last week as well, where you kind of felt like you were going to be in a winning position and you didn't necessarily get the final play or two when it came to a goal or a save that needed to be made that could make things happen and get you that. So I think from Charlotte's perspective, it's still very unsettled. I think the summer transfer window opens next Wednesday. They already have one player coming in Scott Arfield. Latan just says he wants at least 2 more. I think that there's still more work to be done and business to be done from the sporting department. And I think you're getting healthy at the right time too. So I feel like I'm going to reserve judgment over the next 3 or 4 games. Ask me again at the League's Cup break where Charlotte FC is and if we're satisfied, because I think by that time, 3 more games out, I do feel like they will at least put themselves in the playoff positioning and ready for a stretch drive that's going to help them get themselves their first playoff berth in Major League Soccer history.
Willie P., enjoy your 4th of July weekend. We'll talk next week.
Boom, boom. Appreciate you.
The Drive with Josh Graham, only on WSJS.
Before we get to At the Movies with the WD, some NFL news. We know the players who have been suspended for gambling violations in the NFL. Isaiah Rodgers is the one we already knew about, who acknowledged wrongdoing and taking full responsibility for betting a few weeks ago. What we didn't know was that free agent and former App State defensive end Demetrius Taylor is one of those suspended, and not just suspended 6 games like Jameson Williams, the former Alabama star at Detroit. He suspended the entire year for betting on NFL games. That is a 1-year suspension at least.
Send me that cash out.
It's described as an indefinite suspension, and that's probably it for Demetrius Taylor's career. When you are not a top draft pick, and he wasn't, and when you don't come from the blue blood, thoroughbred school, and as much as App State is revered around here, nationally, they're not so much. They are not in the Power Five, for example. And when you're not on a team right now, and you have this happen, this is something that's going to be attached for him to him for the rest of his career, whatever's left of it, if there is a career to come back to. That's a real shame, because he was one of my favorites to watch at Appalachian State. That's the news that just came out today in the NFL. Hard transition to 1975's Jaws at the movies.
Unless you're talking about Star Wars,
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Movies aren't exactly Will's thing.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
But that's about to change because Josh can't stand it anymore. This is At the Movies with Will Dalton.
Okay, let me paint the picture. WD was over at my place last Friday, and we had, with our church group that we have over to our house each week, we had some folks come over for an ice cream social, and then a few blocks from our home, there was supposed to be an outdoor movie to watch Jaws. So I invited WD to watch that with us.
D needs more of a thinking man's picture.
Oh, yeah. What's up, Iron Eagle? I thought that it was going to be at Bailey Park. I thought it might be at Rinalda. I've seen both places have outdoor movies, and you have all that grass, so it's a great setting to do that. Not where we went on Friday. We show up to this place in downtown Winston, and they have a big screen, I'll give them that, but it's in a parking lot, and there are no grassy areas to sit a blanket down. We had blankets. We didn't bring chairs. So I called an audible, hot route, Blue 47, Omaha, and said, you know what? I'm just going to pay $3 on YouTube, and we can watch it at our home. And that's exactly what we did. In the comfort of our home, that's the first time that WD watched Jaws. What did you like about it?
Well, I asked you before I watched it, is this a horror movie? And you said no. But
it's a thriller.
I thought it did kind of have horror movie type vibes. I thought
this movie probably inspired the genre of horror movies. Horror movies didn't really exist. They were usually all thrillers. Like, I don't count Rosemary's Baby, or excuse me, I don't count Psycho as being a horror movie. I don't think that's a horror movie. That's a thriller. There's some scary moments in it, sure, but the point of the movie is not to be a scare. It's not. Halloween came 3 years after this
makes
movie,
sense.
And it probably inspired it, is the point I'm making.
And I also like the fact that, and we said it that night, they didn't waste any time. They got right to the point.
That's such a good point.
When the skinny dipper was swimming around and, you know, just she gets taken down. I'm like, oh, okay, we're just getting right to it. And I like that.
What you're really hitting on is this is truly a timeless movie. It all holds up. It looks great. It doesn't have anything that particularly ages poorly in it. Maybe if we would have saw the shark more, it might not have looked the part, but we don't see the shark enough for that to look bad.
That's another
or to look outdated.
Another thing I like.
It's not slow, to your point. And when the shark's killed, the movie ends within 2 or 3 minutes after it happens. So it starts, like a lot of 70s movies can be pretty slow. Not this. And the suspense works. Like someone who was at the parties in her early 20s, that she's at our place, she'd seen the movie before, and she's like putting like blankets over her eyes and
Willow.
She's scared. It still holds up. The suspense, the music, it all works. It is a timeless classic. This is the type of movie, I don't have any kids, but the idea of having kids is exciting for me in part so that I can introduce them to Jaws one day. Like that, these are one of those movies that you just want to show the people around you that you care about. What didn't you like about it?
Well, getting back to that opening scene, the first thing I thought was, everybody knows the sharks feed at night. Why?
I didn't know that.
That's what my mom told me growing up.
So I guess everybody didn't know that then.
Like, why would you be out there swimming around at evening time?
We didn't. Well, you're not expecting sharks.
You're not?
I'm not.
In the water at dark?
I didn't know sharks feed at night. This
they
is not
do.
News to this is news to me. I mean, not all of us had Wilt Dalton's mom as their mom.
Well, no, they did.
My mom didn't teach me that. I didn't know that. That's not common knowledge.
Also, so the little boy that dies second.
Yeah.
And then the woman that is wearing all black and comes up and slaps the guy. Is that supposed to be his mom?
Yes.
She looks way too old to be the mother of a 6 or 7 year old.
That's a great point.
Like, she looks like she should be his grandmother.
That's a great point. She does look a little old to be that boy's mom.
Yeah.
It's a great point. But you're kind of, again, hitting on something that I didn't like. It's probably the only thing I don't like. This movie was PG. A boy in a pool of blood got murdered by a shark. A nude woman murdered by a shark. There is profanity left and right. Shaw, that scene was a lot longer than I remembered it being. Blood spitting out of his mouth, killed by a shark. PG, parental guidance. I get PG-13 didn't exist back then, but a lot closer to rated R than PG, I'd say this movie was. Bad job by those people. Best quote for Jaws 75.
I mean, it's really anything that comes out of Quint's mouth.
I disagree.
But specifically the monologue, 1,100 men went in the water.
Like a doe's eye.
316 came out. The shark took the rest.
There really is only one answer to this. It's, you're gonna need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
It's the most iconic
it's so
quote
simple.
From this movie. And it's also probably the most incorrectly quoted iconic movie quote. Most people say, we're going to need a bigger boat. That's not what he said. It's Brody saying, you're going to need a bigger boat. Rotten Tomatoes, what do you think the audience score was or is for Jaws?
75.
90.
I go low for a change in its
weight. One of the greatest movies ever.
Well, I...
And that's been At the Movies with the WD. Show some respect.
Well, there's been times where I rate something high that's an all-time classic, and people, it was actually kind of low.
Give me an example.
I can't remember one off the top of my head, but I've done it.
We do need to figure out what movie... Oh, wait, we don't, actually. Thanks to our friend Ian Eagle, we know that the movie you're going to be watching next week is Old School. So, for some, it's probably crazy that this movie is 50 years old. Not Old School, but Jaws. Old School, about to be 20 years old. Who are we going to here?
Joey in Thomasville wants to get in on this.
All right, Joey, what do you have for us?
Listen, I know Will's not old enough. Josh, I don't even think you're old enough. How old were you when the movie came out?
I was not alive when Jaws came out.
Okay, I didn't think so. Okay, well, as one that was old enough that when this movie came out, I'm telling you, nationwide, people would not go in the water.
Yeah.
They would not go in the ocean, including myself. And, you know, I love going to the beach. I love going into the ocean.
How old were you when you saw it? How old were you when you saw it?
What year did it come out?
75.
75, so I've been 7 years old.
You didn't see. Well, I guess since it was PG, you could have been. Did you watch it in the theater in seven?
I did. My mom would take us to the local theater, me and my brother, and they would drop us off. And even then, on rated R movies, we would just like, she would sit there in the car, and we would point to the ticket from the ticket window and say, "That's our mom in the car." She said it's okay, and they'd let us in.
What? Give me a rated R movie you snuck into.
I wouldn't even say snuck into. They let us into. I mean, I saw Porky's. Porky's, I think, was rated R.
That is incredible. I love it. I love it. Yeah. And you're right. Thank you for the call, Joey. There were national surveys done, and beach going went down in the summer of 1975. But yeah, there it is. PG movie, and 7-year-old Joey in Thomasville is being let into the movie. And into other rated R movies, apparently. I guess people just didn't care.
It's The Drive with Josh Graham, WSJS.
The sixth man of Tar Heel basketball is BDOT. Did a great job filling in on this show a few days ago. If you missed his conversation with Chris Paul, you can find that on our YouTube channel. Excellent job by Dot. BDOT, since you are the sixth man of Tar Heel basketball,
six.
And North Carolina began its first week of practice. We're talking about practice? Summer practice. I figure we should talk about the Heels a little bit. What are you hearing about the Tar Heels during the first couple of practices out that way? Anything?
None of your business. none of your business. I will share to my Carolina family that may be listening, though, to them that may ask me, I will answer to them, but not to you, Josh. You just being nosy and want to know what's going on in basketball heaven, and that's really none of your freaking business.
Can you tell me, Don?
Yeah, WD. So I've been hearing about a lot of oops, a lot of highlights. I feel like we're going to be a real fast-paced team. A lot of buckets from behind the perimeter I've been hearing. This is going to be some fun stuff to watch already, WD and the rest of Carolina family.
We're starting on a combative note. I don't know where this is coming from. Are you mad because, like a lot of other Tar Heel fans got mad that I said that Carolina was good but not like a top 15 team in the country yesterday?
Nope, didn't hear your ignorance yesterday, and I'm so thankful that I didn't. You know, you always try to push the battery in our back, Josh Graham. You always try to poke the bear. Hey, bear, but we're not going to let you, Josh Graham. We're not going to let you poke the bears this year. I wish the Carolina family would just ignore you. Just ignore Josh Graham. He only says things because he knows we're emotional enough to respond.
Well, all that happened was I was not even talking about Carolina. I just said in passing that this was a so-so Carolina team for their standard to make a point about something that wasn't even Carolina related. And then someone objected to that. I'm like, well, hold on a second. They're going to be better than they were last year. They're going to make the tournament. But so-so for Carolina standard is winning a couple games in the tournament, and that's what you are. That's still a pretty good season. That's still a pretty good team. But no, you have to be top 15. You have to be top 10 all the time. I'm like, well, hold one second. Getting back to the tournament would be a great step after missing the tournament a year ago. Like, that's not insulting. That's not denigrating.
But do you see our point, though? But do you see our point? You were making a reference to Carolina basketball, and you just admitted it had nothing to do with Carolina basketball. Why even address us?
Oh, no. Well,
it
was relevant. It was relevant.
It was
relevant, but it wasn't. I wasn't talking about the Tar Heels. I was using them to make a point about
a disparaging point. You always use us when you're making a disparaging point or a condescending comment. You always do that, Josh Graham. That's why we don't talk to you about Carolina stuff, because we know what you're doing. But WD, like I was saying, Should be some fun this season. I'm excited about it. Again, like I was telling the people that I was talking to, WD, I'm not going to get too excited in June about a team that has to compete, hopefully, in March. But like I told you when I filled in for JG earlier this week, I'm loving the energy that I'm feeling this season from the locker room versus the energy from last year, a year ago.
I remember the context now. It was, I thought.
I'm still on it.
I wish it was Duke. I wish Duke would have been matched up with Tennessee because they played in the NCAA tournament and Tennessee beat Duke, and that'd be like a compelling rematch situation. And instead, they sent Tennessee to play a so-so Carolina team. That was the context of me bringing that up. But how excited are you about the Vols coming into the Smith Center?
I'm excited for anybody coming into the Smith Center because I want us to go undefeated this year. And anybody that we can get in the Smith Center that we can give an L to, I'm happy for that. You dig what I'm saying? Like, I really wouldn't have cared who they'd have put.
Undefeated in the Smith Center, though, right? You're not saying undefeated as like a team, first team to ever go 40-0. We're first one since Indiana in the 70s. That's not what we're saying, right?
Rewind the tape, Josh Graham. See, there you go, trying to put words in my mouth like a baby.
No,
trying to get
I just want clarification.
I specifically said undefeated in the Smith Center, undefeated in the Dean Dome. My first season as arena host, we lost 2 games. It drove me crazy. The next last season, we lost 3 games. It drove me crazy. So this season, I want us to do the unthinkable. 16-0 at the house.
Unthinkable. Duke did that last year. Just throwing that out there.
I'm not talking about Duke, though. You see my point? You see what I'm saying? Like, I'm not talking about Duke.
No, okay, that time, I'll own that. That time, I was just being mean. I'm sorry. That was me being mean. I shouldn't have done that.
You do it on purpose.
That time I did it on purpose. Is Armando Bacot...
Armando...
Like, legit serious that he does not like that drop? Like, legitimately?
Yeah, like, legit. Like, I don't know where you all stand in the 10 bands for the sound drop. I don't know where we are with that whole situation. But I do know that when he hears that sound bite, he legit cringes.
Armando.
Yeah.
What do you think I should do?
I don't know. I think you should just lay low. I don't think you should pressure it.
For those who don't know, Armando Bacot offered me, as Dot just outlined there, $10,000 to stop playing that sound and stop posting that video on social media. And I said that if he accepted it, we still get to play a drop of that, but it won't be him and it won't be that one. And the money would go to charity. That's what I agreed to.
I think you should know that he has seen that. And also just be confident in the fact that you know you're going to run into Armando. You know, at meetings. You're going to run into Armando at a game, or you just may run into Armando in Chapel Hill somewhere. Yeah, so whenever you see Armando, you just make sure that you're saying Armando enough so that he hears the Armando clip, and it's extremely aggravating for him to hear Armando so many times that he pays you to stop playing the Armando clip.
Right, and people on social media and watching on YouTube, you should totally not reach out to Armando and ask him when he's going to accept our offer. You should not do that. That's not what I'm encouraging you to do.
I agree. I don't think reaching out to Armando to say, hey, Armando, they're playing this Armando noise every single time they say Armando, because I don't think that will make Armando move any faster. I think you should just wait until you see Armando. Josh Graham, and then you'll handle the Armando soundbite.
Yes, if you're on Twitter.
I hit the wrong one.
If you're on Twitter, do not at @IGet_buckets35. Don't go there. You can talk about it amongst yourselves, but do not message him there and bring this up, because probably he's not wanting to talk about that there. Or on Instagram, I wouldn't hit him up @Armando either.
Armando.
Just leave Armando alone about the Armando soundbite, because clearly Armando doesn't have a problem with the Armando soundbite, because Armando would have paid money to stop the Armando soundbite.
There you go. Let's get to grammar school.
Josh Graham has his own way of speaking.
Lava.
And just when you think it can't get any worse, rah, 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 Josh is going to attempt to learn B-Dot's vernacular.
I'm
going to
put one in the air.
It's time for B-Dot's Grammar School.
Nobody better than B-Dot. Pre-game, during game, post-game.
Brought to you by Heritage Hardwood Floors. When it comes to flooring, they have no ceiling.
Heritage Hardwood Floors!
Yes.
Hey, do you think Armando would walk on a Heritage Hardwood floor?
I bet you he has. And didn't even know. He's like, wow, this is really nice. What is it? Oh, it's a Heritage Hardwood floor.
Hey, and when it comes to flooring, they have no ceiling. This is grammar school. Very simple. If it's your first time listening, I have three urban words or phrases. If Josh gets two out of three correct, he gets a satisfactory grade. But he kicks it off with a word of Caucasic persuasion.
So last night, there was a perfect game in Major League Baseball. It's only happened 24 times ever. We're talking 150 plus years of baseball. 24 times. What's it mean when somebody has a perfect game?
A perfect game is when the pitcher throws a no-hitter in it, but like nobody hits the ball at all out of all the pitches. Like nobody, there's no run scored or nothing.
WD, I'm going to need a ruling on this.
That's correct.
Okay. He said not allowing any runs and throwing a no-hitter. That's what he said. Which is close enough.
It is.
But it also means no walks.
Yeah.
It means
no runners of any kind.
No runners of any
kind. Nobody gets on base at all.
27 up, 27 down. That's what that means. Okay.
That's impressive.
336-777-1600. Yeah, shout out to Domingo Herman. He was the 24th man to ever throw a perfect game. What do you have for me? 336-777-1600 if you'd like to be a helper for me. Do we have any tickets to give away, potentially? No, we don't have any. But we do have some callers who want to help us out. What's the first word?
What is a same cider, Josh Graham? A same cider.
Same cider.
And I will have to admit that I am a same cider.
So that's spelled S-I-D-E-R, not like cider, like a sour.
Correct. Okay. Correct. S-I-D-E-R, not a beverage. Correct.
Same cider. I'm on the same side. I think that means that you sleep on the same side of the bed every night. That's a same cider.
Is that your final answer?
Yes.
That is incorrect.
No!
A same cider is a person or a couple that sits on the same side of the booth at a restaurant.
Oh!
Yeah,
you're a same cider? I'm always face to face.
I am definitely a same cider, dude. Like, I'll sit there and just lay up under the wife while we're sitting in the booth. Sometimes I'll do face to face, but most times, more times than not, I'm same cider, dude.
Only time I same side is when there's like a TV with a game on that I want to watch that she has a better angle at than I would. What's the next one?
Where is Waho?
Waho?
Yeah, W-A-H-O. W-A-H-O. Where's Waho?
Waho. 336-777-1600. Waho.
Waho.
See, my Baltimore roots come out a little bit when O's are emphasized. Waho. You know, it's one letter short of what Virginia fans commonly refer to themselves as, Wahoos. But
That's a very good point.
Waho.
I'm pretty sure there's a Waho in Virginia.
I'm going to use WD potentially here. No, you're looking at me with a blank stare. You don't know what a Wahoo is.
I don't.
Well, you might want to use him for this because you can't use him for the music next because he had to produce the music. So y'all might want to try to talk through Wahoo.
What do you think when you hear Wahoo?
Wahoos.
Okay, well, I just said that. I meant, like, among things that I haven't already just said. Wahoo. I want to go to the audience to see if they could potentially help me here. 336-777-1600. But who do we have? Do you think that this is someone that could help?
Well, they didn't want to go on air, but they did pass it along to me. And so I will give it.
Yeah, what is it?
Waffle House.
Oh! Great Jonas Brothers song, too. That's been stuck in my head. Waffle House, that makes sense. Yeah, we're going to go with that, Dot.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's 100% correct.
That means I have a shot to win it with the music question. I have a shot. Did the person want to at least be named? Give them credit?
It was Artie.
Thanks, Artie.
It was Artie. He's won a lot of stuff from us. He didn't want to
do. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Sounds like he deserves it.
You definitely still could have came on. You didn't have to win anything, but you could have put your voice on the air. We appreciate that, Artie, my boy.
All right. What's the music question here?
All right. Turn the music down, please, WD. My question for you, Josh Graham. This is music. This is a current song.
Oh. That's not good. That's not good.
And Lotto says, rip her out the plastic. Why does Lotto want to be ripped out of the plastic?
Is this from the song Lottery?
No. It's from the song Put It On Flow.
Oh, Put It On The Flow. Okay.
Heritage Hardwood Flow.
Heritage Hardwood. Why does she want to put it out the plastic?
No. Why does she want to be ripped out of the plastic?
Ripped
why does Lotto out. Need to be ripped out of the plastic?
Oh, because the clothes are now, new. Her clothes are like new. They're like still like in like the plastic that you have them in. It's new clothes.
Because she's got new clothes?
Yeah.
Hold on. Let me go to my judge. Ryan! Come here!
I need Ryan's help!
All right, we're going to bring Ryan down and see if you should get this point, okay? Now, Ryan is my 11-year-old daughter, and she definitely knows the answer to this song, well, the answer to this question by song, but I'm going to see if you're close enough.
Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
Okay, come over here real quick. Say hi to Josh. Say hi, Josh.
Hey, Ryan.
Hi, Josh.
Hey, Ryan.
All right, you got to use your big girl voice because we're on the radio, okay? So listen, I asked Josh a question. I said, why does Lotto want to be ripped out of the plastic? Okay. Why does Lotto want to be ripped out of the plastic, Josh?
I'm assuming because like the clothes are, it's like new clothes that she has. Like she wants to be ripped out of the plastic. She wants to wear the new clothes.
Should we give him that point, Ryan? She's thinking about it. She's looking around. What do you say?
Yes.
She says yes. Go to the music.
Rip me out the plastic. I've been acting brand new. He's acting like they run it. They really ran through. I spent that 500 before I ever trap you. They thought I was gonna fall off. I hate to bring you bad news.
Let's go.
Threw so many racks. A bitch can't even see the phone.
Congratulations, Josh Graham.
Thanks, Ryan.
She says you're welcome. Rip me out the plastic. It's not because her clothes are brand new. It's because she has been acting brand new.
Oh,
rip me out the plastic. I've been acting brand new.
That's a dub, man. That's a dub.
Yep.
I'm going to be jamming the Lotto on the way home.
Yeah, you should, man. That's a pretty dope track. Put it on the flow, Lotto.
Dot, thanks for doing this. We'll talk next week.
Appreciate you guys, man. I'll be back.